The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, on today's show, we'll be examining a recent New York Times piece that essentially makes the same point that we've been making at the Trumpet over and again, certainly for the last 2 or 3 years. I'll point you to a Trumpet piece from 2.5 years ago, I think it is, by Brad McDonald. And again, you're reading some of the very same points and thoughts and predictions, in our case, that are now happening, that are now being reported on in the New York Times. I'll tell you what, with each passing day, it just makes you appreciate thetrumpet.com, the Trumpet magazine, more and more. And even before that, The Plain Truth and Herbert Armstrong's old radio program, The World Tomorrow. This is the great news source that world leaders and scientists and educators, they've left this out of the picture. It's not even in the equation. And this is the major world news source that's been universally overlooked. That which is based on Bible prophecy. Tomorrow's news today. That's what the Trumpet's been doing, and The Plain Truth before us, reporting world news even before it happens. Back in 1999, let me just give you an example of this. There's several, as you'll see on today's program. But here's one, 1999, so we're talking 18 years ago. And we wrote at the Trumpet magazine, once Europe no longer needs America's forces, It will no longer need or want America. It says, until that happens, however, the German-led Europe will continue using NATO to camouflage its imperialistic ambitions. So we said, 18 years ago, we said that Europe, a German-led Europe, would use NATO to further its imperialistic ambitions. And then when the time was right, well, they'd shake free from it and go it alone. But up until now, I mean, it's been used as a perfect camouflage. And we used an example in that 1999 article, the example of Yugoslavia, and how that it was Germany, basically. Germany, using the NATO camouflage, that went in there and broke up Yugoslavia. And back there, their traditional World War II allies. All the firepower back then, this is in the late 1990s, the firepower was America's. But it was Germany's ambition. It was Germany's plan. And there they were, using NATO to further their own purposes and designs. We wrote in 1999, right now, Germany and its European allies need America. But that is changing fast. You talk about tomorrow's headlines today. That's what we were putting on print or in print in 1999. It says, for now, however, Europe will continue to use American firepower, but only as long as it needs it. When that's no longer the case, NATO's forces will be superseded by the European Union's, leaving a weakened Britain, Canada, and America on the outside looking in. It won't be long before Europe completely severs its ties with these English-speaking nations. True, America's military forces are still far superior to any other power in the world. But that's all changing, we went on to say. It's changing fast. And so now you have the Munich Security Conference over the past 3 days or so. You have all of the reaction to Donald Trump's presidency, and before that, Brexit. The plans, the discussions underway in Germany, in Europe, to build its own military, to defend itself, as Spiegel wrote just the other day, over the weekend. Spiegel's article, Europe must plan to defend itself. It no longer can rely on America. It no longer needs America, really. That's the truer headline. But they're saying all the right things. Well, we can't rely on Donald Trump. Well, America's unpredictable. Or in some cases, well, America's now one of our enemies. Spiegel says, Europe has long relied on America for its defense, but that era is rapidly coming to an end. That's Spiegel now. We're not quoting from the Trumpet anymore. The Trumpet article I gave you was from 1999, but here is Spiegel saying that that era is rapidly coming to an end. It says it's time for a stronger European defense alliance that is less dependent on the U.S. and more capable of asserting its own interests with Russia and Turkey. It refers back to this 2014 summit when Germany announced that it would dramatically increase its defense spending. That was a couple of years ago, and well, now you've got, as it says here, with Trump and his defense secretary, James Mattis, now admonishing Germany to fulfill its pledge. Well, we've got to go forward, keep our promise. But also, you look at the leadership of the United States. Spiegel says there's no reason that more than 70 years after World War II, the United States should continue carrying the main burden for ensuring European security. There's no reason for this to continue on as it has for some 70 years. There's a new world order. Europe no longer needs or can rely upon America's firepower. Europe now has what it takes. Europe now has what it needs to go forward. It just needs to become a little bit more unified. And once they all have the one mind, as it says in Revelation 17, then you're going to see some kind of ramping up as far as defense spending goes. Once they're all thinking the same way, those 10 nations, those 10 kings, then the firepower will soon follow. I mean, look at what Adolf Hitler inherited in 1933. No one would have thought, as crazy as he was at that time, no one could have thought that just 5 years later, he would have built this Nazi war machine. That's all that it took. Just 5 years. Spiegel says here, America's justified demand comes right in the middle of an internal crisis in the West, so deep that nobody knows how much of the West will be left in the end. That's what we're facing, Spiegel says. This is one of Germany's leading publications. Look, there's a crisis in the West. The liberal order, I mean, it's crumbling before us. And it talks about how NATO is there to supposedly protect that liberal order, those Western principles. But Spiegel says, but are we certain that the West is still a community of shared values? If it's not, then what is NATO defending? That's pretty strong language coming from Spiegel. I mean, are we sure we even have the same values as the United States? What if the U.S. goes off and confronts Iran or North Korea? Are we sure, Spiegel says, are we sure that we want to be on board with that? Spiegel says NATO is not obsolete, but its importance is dwindling. It has become hollow. The era in European history when the continent could delegate its security to a partner across the Atlantic has passed irrevocably. It's passed. It's over. We're moving on. America is still a possible partner, it goes on and says, but it's no longer reliable. It's not a reliable partner. Do you hear this? Do you hear what Spiegel's saying, or do you see what they're writing? Europe's got to be able to defend itself. And then just go back, read what we said. In May of 1999, once Europe no longer needs America's forces, it will no longer need or want America. That's from 1999. That's from 18 years ago. Tomorrow's news today. Tomorrow's news today. Spiegel says Europe must be capable of sufficiently defending itself and providing for its own security. What is most needed in order to make that happen is unity. Unity, that's what's most needed. Revelation 17:12, these 10 have one mind. When that kind of unity is there, and it's not quite there yet, it's difficult to bring it together because it's a mixture of iron and clay. That's Daniel 2. You see all of these prophecies factoring in. Prophecies we've been talking about for decades. But when they come together with one mind, then you're going to see some unity. You're going to see the kind of unity it takes to build a military machine. If Germany and other Europeans now spend more on defense, they will also have to increase their military cooperation as well as massively expand the EU's common security and defense policy. We're looking at massive changes in Europe. Led by Germany, what we're witnessing is Germany's dramatic transformation, something that's prophesied in your Bible, something we've been talking about for decades. Going back to Mr. Armstrong's radio program, his television program, the Plain Truth magazine, the Trumpet magazine, my father's Key of David program. Notice this, and this brings up what we've been saying the last couple of weeks. America's withdrawal actually represents an opportunity for Europe. There you hear it again. This is not just something that's frightened a few. There's quite a few leaders in the heart of Europe, in Germany in particular, that see this as an opportunity. This is their opportunity to break free from U.S. dominance and to go it alone. Back in 99, we were saying, well, right now, Germany can use NATO to camouflage their imperialistic ambitions. I mean, they just went in there and destroyed Yugoslavia. The whole world was against it at the start, as we write about in our booklet, The Rising Beast. But the United States caved in. The UN caved in. Everybody caved in. Imperialistic ambitions, totally camouflaged under the NATO umbrella. But now America's withdrawal. You see, it's America's fault. This actually represents an opportunity for Europe. The idea of Europe being a junior partner could finally be consigned to the dustbin of history and lead Europe to begin defining its own interests. Europe can go on its own now, defining its own interests. Ultimately, a Europe that is serious about its own security will also have to consider nuclear deterrence. Well, there you go. So should we just turn the page on the Spiegel magazine and look for the next article? Or should we pause on these dramatic statements talking about a dramatic transformation happening in Germany and Europe today? Yes, well, along these same lines, we should also talk about nuclear deterrence. A German bomb. Well, we've forgotten our history. Recent history at that, it was NATO's first Secretary General, Lord Ismay, who famously defined the role of NATO as this: to keep the Russians out, the Americans in, and the Germans down. That was the objective from the beginning. And who can forget the document that Winston Churchill and Franklin Roosevelt signed, one that we refer to often at thetrumpet.com. They said together in a joint statement, February 1945, even as the war was drawing to an end, "It's our inflexible purpose to destroy German militarism and Nazism and to ensure that Germany will never again be able to disturb the peace of the world." That was in 1945. So we've gone from destroying German militarism to all of these calls for Germany to step up and to defend itself and to even potentially build a German bomb, a nuclear bomb. How's that for forgetting the lessons of history? These two, Churchill and Roosevelt, they say we're determined to disarm and disband all German armed forces, break up for all time the German general staff that has repeatedly contrived the resurgence of German militarism. I mean, it's just happened over and over and over again. It's happened repeatedly. And so their goal coming out of World War II was to destroy all German military equipment, to eliminate or control all German industry that could be used for military production. Well, that was 1945. Today, it's quite different. Today, I mean, we're 70-some years on from the end of that period. And we now need to defend ourselves, they're saying in Germany. The NATO era is rapidly coming to an end. It's time for a stronger European defense, a stronger alliance. It's time for all member states to pour money into defense. These are some alarming headlines, and they're just coming out every day, every other day, it seems. It's nonstop. The Guardian had a piece today on the Munich conference. Three dangerous superpowers, and we're stuck in the middle. And so the dangers now, China, Russia, and the United States. Boy, the United States is really the bad guy all of a sudden. And what should Europe do? What should Europe do in a world dominated by these three bad guys? The U.S., a resurgent Russia, and China. All three, it says, frequently acting irresponsibly. I mean, I know this is The Guardian, but still. All three of them frequently acting irresponsibly. What should Europe do? Well, they've got to step up and defend themselves, just like Spiegel says. And you've got, as it says later in this Guardian piece, you've got Theresa May throwing her lot in with Donald Trump. And so an increasingly isolated United States and Britain, that's what's coming when the whole world gangs up on the U.S. and Britain. And Europe's got to be ready. Project Syndicate, it had a piece following the Munich Security Conference as well. The European Union first. You've heard about America first. Donald Trump's new credo. You've heard that. Here's Europe's. We've got to put the EU first. We've been saying this from the start. Okay, so it sounds pretty good. A lot of what Mr. Trump is saying, you can see why his supporters are really excited. But how will other nations respond? How are other nations responding? Project Syndicate says the key to enabling the EU to meet this potential to save itself and the world from catastrophe is for member states urgently to adopt a European Union first mantra. And it goes on and says that unlike the American first credo embraced by President Donald Trump, such a mantra would not be an exercise in damaging unilateralism. it would help the world. Quite unlike the America First policy. So we need a strong European Union to save the world. To save the world from these uprisings, these populist movements, these nationalist movements. It says if the U.S. cannot be counted on to support global stability, the EU's model and experience will become even more important. And then it goes on and talks about how much success Europe has had in bringing peace and stability to this earth, as if they don't realize that that's been the most war-torn continent on earth, going back to the very earliest stages of human civilization. The pace, dramatic changes, they're happening fast, as I say. You look at what Hitler inherited in 1933, a run-down, dilapidated military force, totally incapable of carrying out his goals, his ambitions. But 5 years later, just 5 years, he had transformed that into a war machine like this earth has rarely seen. How long do you suppose it will take? Once there's the unity, the one mind of Revelation 17:12, how long do you suppose it will take? Germany already has nukes. They're American, but they're on their soil. France has nukes. When all the member states, the 10 that come together, even at just putting in 2% towards defense, how fast? Germany's already one of the world's leading exporters of military arms. We mentioned that last week. How fast could it turn into a military machine with the military might that's prophesied in so many Bible passages? Something that we need to be thinking about. Satan's been cast down and confined to this earth. And he knows, as it says in Revelation 12, he knows his time is short. He's about out of time. And that's why we're seeing such a dramatic acceleration in the pace of these prophecies. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us this week. You can send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Revelation 6 stands out as an important chapter because of how it locks in with another one of Jesus Christ's prophecies. The glorified Christ revealed these future events to John in Revelation 6, and it was Jesus Christ as a human being, God in the flesh, who prophesied these same events in Matthew 24, the same Christ. In the traditional Christian world, we hear a lot about Christ as our sacrifice, our Savior. But how about Jesus Christ the prophet? That's exactly what he was. His gospel and his whole message revolved around prophecy. So to know Christ means to know about the prophecies he spoke in Revelation and in Matthew. This free booklet, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, shows that what Christ prophesied in Matthew 24 is primarily for the end time. For more than five decades, Herbert W. Armstrong declared a powerful and consistent warning about the dramatic fulfillment of end-time prophecy. Using the Bible as his guide, Mr. Armstrong made bold predictions about the course of world events long before they occurred. He Was Right encapsulates what he boldly proclaimed for more than 50 years. This free booklet will build your faith in the certainty of biblical prophecy. Request He Was Right and The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Both booklets are offered free of charge at no cost or obligation to you. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Over the weekend, we played a program titled Russia Worries Europe and Fulfills Bible Prophecy that was on TV here in the UK, and it brought in 154 requests for Russia and China in Prophecy, a booklet we haven't advertised, I think, in maybe a year and a half. So a strong response following the program on Russia and how it's worrying Europe. The week before, we ran the repeat, Is There a Real Spirit World?, offering Mystery of the Ages, and following, I think, 8 or 10 more requests that came in through the week. The total for that program amounts to 151, so two pretty good programs over the last couple of weeks. This week, we've got another new one But the topic escapes my mind. It's hard to keep track of all of these different topics we're digging into. I mentioned at the start of the show, though, this New York Times piece and how that you could have read about these very developments in the trumpet 2.5, 3 years ago. Really, even going back to Richard Palmer gave me an article today from the September 1985 Plain Truth. That was just before Herbert Armstrong died. And you see some of the same things there. I just looked at the first chapter of our booklet, Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, a booklet we produced many years ago. The first chapter of that, The Resurgence of Nazi Germany, that first appeared in the Trumpet magazine in 1997, 20 years ago. And we'll look at some of the material from that particular chapter a little bit later on. First, let me refer you to Brad McDonald's piece from September 2014. This is about Germany's identity crisis. This is 2.5 years ago. This is talking about Germany's identity crisis and how the world is getting more and more dangerous and unstable, and how that Germany was going to have to change in order for a number of Bible prophecies to be fulfilled. Brad McDonald said many of Germany's leaders recognize this reality, and they do want to respond to it, these dangers, by becoming more militaristic, by becoming more assertive. But notice what we wrote. For now, however, their ability, the leaders that is, their ability to forge Germany into an assertive, aggressive, and dominant world power is being limited by the reticence and caution of the German public. But that is changing. That's what we said at the trumpet, September in 2014. This was before the refugee crisis of 2015. It says here, moreover, as the crises intensify and begin to impact the Germans more personally, their attitudes will change. They'll change more rapidly and dramatically. That's what we were saying at the trumpet. You can look for a dramatic transformation or change, and it's going to happen rapidly, we said. We need to keep an eye on Germany as it comes through this identity crisis. It's coming through. It's going to come through this crisis. Don't you worry. This is what the Bible prophesies. We said it is producing a new German nation, a nation far more active and aggressive than what we are accustomed to seeing, a nation that is aggressive, that is an aggressive political and military powerhouse, a German nation the world hasn't seen since World War II, a German nation that historically has been a threat to regional and world peace. That's the thing that Churchill and Roosevelt said would never happen again. I mean, we've got to make sure that it doesn't, that it never again disturbs world peace. Remember again, Lord Ismay, NATO's objective, keep the Russians out, keep the Americans in, and keep the Germans down. Well, this piece from 2014... Actually, let me switch over to 2015. It's another one by Brad McDonald at thetrumpet.com. That one I just read to you, that was September 2014. This was from November 2015, some 16 months ago or so. And he writes, perhaps the greatest effect of the refugee crisis. So now we're into the refugee crisis. That really peaked in the summer of 2015, if you remember. And so following that, just a few months later, Brad McDonald says, perhaps the greatest effect of the refugee crisis, together with Russia's dramatic resurgence and Europe's rolling financial problems, is the way it is causing Europe to shed this post-war veneer and return to its past. That's the greatest impact of all these crises. This is what we need to keep our eyes on. He says, but there's another important angle to this crisis that hasn't received nearly enough consideration. This is the impact the refugee crisis is having and will increasingly have on Europe. Not just the immense financial cost or the potential infiltration by Islamic terrorists or the inevitable erosion of European culture. These consequences are significant, but something more fundamental and more alarming is unfolding. It says Europe is experiencing a transformative identity crisis. See, what happens when it comes out of this identity crisis? That's what we were preparing you for. Sure, the costs. I mean, there'd be an impact on European culture. And Islamist terrorists would make their way into Europe. We've seen that happen. But what about this transformative identity crisis? That was at the end of 2015, that article. And then what did we see in 2016 with all of those regional elections in Germany? Well, you remember in March, just less than a year ago, when the Alternative for Deutschland party in the Rhineland elections, Baden-Württemberg, it pulled in 12.6% in the one and 15.1% of the vote in the other, which was double their previous level of support in those elections. I mean, this was huge news. It was shocking news. This was just a year ago. 12.6 and 15.1%. And then in elections at that same time, Saxony-Anhalt, the AfD, the far-right party in Germany, came in second with 24.2% of the vote. That represents a transformative Germany, one coming out of an identity crisis. Later on in the year, this is September 2016, the AfD comes in second again. And this time it's in Angela Merkel's own neighborhood. It's in her backyard. 20.8% of the vote. I think it was in this district. Well, yeah, it even beat Angela Merkel's party in her own district. That same month, you had the vote in, what about Berlin? I think I remember Mr. McDonald writing about this as well. I mean, Berlin, I mean, if ever there's a city that would reject the far right, the multiculturalist Berlin, and yet even there, 14.2%. This is all going on last year, just over the past year. George Friedman said, in Berlin, at least, the German political system has been shattered. It says, if the Berlin results are replicated on a national level, Germany is going to become ungovernable. This result, taken at face value, indicates that the European foundation, Germany, is moving toward a major political crisis that will resonate. That's just from September. That quote. That's Friedman's take on all these elections with the AfD pulling in 15 and 20%. And the one in Berlin was particularly alarming. Now, let me refer you to the latest piece from the New York Times. This is from the weekend. This is from Saturday's print edition, February 18th. And it says here, as the far right rises across Europe, its ascent in Germany has seemed among the most alarming and puzzling. Well, how do you explain this? In Germany, of all places? I thought we had shed that Nazi past, that far-right past. The Times says here, for decades, Germany was thought to be inoculated against far-right politics by its history with Nazism and the Holocaust. But today, Germany is experiencing a resurgence of the right. That makes me think of that headline from our booklet, Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. The resurgence of Nazi Germany. It's driven, at least in part, by its effort to overcome past misdeeds by suppressing any vestige of nationalism, So it makes the point that, well, they suppressed nationalism coming out of World War II because of just the dangers of going in that direction. But now it's working against them, because they're seeing their nation unravel from within. It goes on and talks about some of the history I just gave to you, the recent history of the AFD's success at the polls and in the voting booths. Only the AFD, whose populism puts it far outside the mainstream, is openly promising to fulfill a desire for patriotism that would be routine in most other countries. The result is that a social and political norm intended to stifle the far right is now empowering it. I mean, for the longest time, they downplayed any kind of nationalism. They even frowned upon standing for the national anthem. But now times are changing, and it's happening fast. The focus on identity has allowed the AFD, even if it is unlikely to win enough votes to govern, it's allowed the AFD to shape the national conversation to its advantage and to present itself as the champion of ordinary Germans. And so it quotes all of these people in the piece, just average everyday Germans, saying that our confidence, our self-confidence has been broken and shattered. And it's refreshing to hear individuals come along like this Bjorn Höcke. He's the one that gave the speech in January. Remember when he was talking about how Germans were acting like a totally vanquished people and we need to turn it around? And he got quite an enthusiastic response from the crowd. I forget where it was that he gave that speech. In any event, the Times says here, for decades, German politicians worked to layer any sense of Germanness beneath a European identity. Well, isn't that interesting? Because when you look at the literature, whether in this church, the Trumpet magazine, or the Plain Truth before, particularly though in the Trumpet over the past 20 years, we've talked about how Germany has used the European Union to camouflage its imperialistic ambitions. What did Bernard Connolly say about, he wrote the book in 1995, The Rotten Heart of Europe. I mean, he was an insider. He was working right at the heart of the exchange rate mechanism in Europe, the European Union. And he comes out with this book in the mid-1990s saying that the European Union, particularly the monetary union, was a cloak. It was a cloak for German ambitions. We use the word camouflage in that article I quoted from earlier. For decades, the Times says, over the weekend, German politicians worked to layer any sense of Germanness beneath a European identity. But all that's changing, and it's happening fast. Dramatic transformation as Europe, or Germany rather, comes out of this identity crisis. Well, it goes, I'm just sifting through this New York Times piece. It talks about Bjorn Höcke, the leader of the AFD, or one of the up-and-coming leaders that gave that speech. That was so well received. The crowd's applause shook the floors, a noisy manifestation of how thrilling transgression can feel in a rule-bound society. Well, it's having an impact. As it says, I mean, it's shaping the national conversation. It doesn't need to win an election. Its impact is already being felt. You can see it even in the way Angela Merkel has kicked off her re-election bid. I mean, she's leaning toward a more populist agenda as well. And it's opening the way for the Daniel Ateman to emerge. He's going to come out from the shadows and seize upon this opportunity. A Europe, a Germany that's finally free to move according to its own ambitions, that's finally free to break free from the United States and its dominance. A Germany, a Europe that's worried about Russia, the resurgence of Vladimir Putin's Russia. Well, you go back to what we've been saying, what we've been preparing you for. I mentioned that article from September 2014. In November 2015, I quoted a bit from that a moment ago as well. Europe's old demons return. We've been telling you this is where it's headed. We've been telling you this for decades. Let me just give you a bit from that old Plain Truth article. And it talks here about Germany's midlife identity crisis. This is from 1985. And at the end of the article, it's an article by Gene Hogberg. It says, in the secular field, German patriotism will not be... This is before Germany even united. Okay, so it's talking mostly about West Germany here. German patriotism will not be revitalized until the Federal Republic can be linked with what some call the fossilized German state in the East. I mean, until it's linked, it can't really become this this revitalized nation where you have proud Germans, proud of their German heritage. Gene Hogberg says, thus, in a roundabout manner, German disillusionment with its American big brother, plus its inability to recover a sense of purely national pride and patriotism, could rebound into a greater German zeal for a Europe united politically and religiously. This, in turn, could lead to the biggest dream of all, a reunited German nation in the heart of Europe, and one that Germans would feel proud of again. That's from as far back as 1985, over 30 years ago. And we've been sounding this alarm ever since then. Going back, as I say, even to that article from 1997. You can read it in the first chapter of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. I mean, some of it, you read through some of it, and it feels dated. Frankly, and yet it's fascinating to read because that's back when Germany's using the EU and it's using the NATO umbrella for its cloak, for its camouflage, and carrying out their imperialistic ambitions in Yugoslavia with the development of the euro. We've talked recently in programs about using the euro to further its own economic gains and aims. Brad McDonald wrote a year ago, this is from March 2016, about the open door policy and how that if Merkel didn't, I mean, if she didn't change or if she continued along with the same open door policy for refugees, we wrote at the Trumpet that she risks helping transform the German people and Germany itself into something very different and much more frightening than the democratic, peaceful, friendly nation that we see today. See, in the leadership sense, in the book of Nahum and Habakkuk, Isaiah as well, Isaiah 10, talks about this great mind change, this transformation in the thinking of a leader, a German leader. And really what we're seeing that on a national level, and it's happening quite fast. It says the Merkel government's handling of this situation is turning the German people into a ticking time bomb. The more disillusioned, frustrated, and angry the German people become, the more vulnerable they will be to radical politics and radical leaders with radical solutions. And so don't be deceived. It wasn't that long ago when Angela Merkel was on Time magazine's cover as Person of the Year. Well, she was welcoming in all the refugees, hundreds of thousands of them. What a humanitarian. What a champion of the liberal order. But don't be deceived, we wrote. All is not well in Germany. We said growing numbers of people are becoming unhappier by the month. not just with the migrants, but with Chancellor Merkel as well. That was a year ago, and now we have headlines like I gave to you last week about the changing climate in Germany. Merkel might lose after all. I mean, suddenly the unthinkable is now very much thinkable. Here again, go back and read chapter 1 of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, The Resurgence of Nazi Germany, an article that ran in the Trumpet magazine 20 years ago. You know, in that article, we quote from Emil Ludwig. He's a German author. He wrote a book back in 1941. This is in the early stages of World War II. And this German author said that the first error to which we succumbed when we believed after the First World War that a new Germany was possible, that first error should protect us against the second. I mean, you would think so. Because in that period between World War I and World War II, we thought, well, everything's changed. I mean, we've just gone through the Great War, the war to end all wars. And now, I mean, certainly now, you have a different Germany. You have a peace-loving, democratic Germany. Shouldn't we have learned from that history? I mean, we didn't. The people leading up to World War II, the few that were sounding the alarm, even though Germany triggered the first one, and then they're just a few years away from the second one, you had Churchill, of course, out there sounding the alarm, and people just called him a warmonger. What a crazy man. What a crazy man for warning about the resurgence of Nazi Germany. Well, to his credit, Churchill kept hammering away. And Britain and the rest of the Western world barely survived. And Germany, coming out of that war, was ruined. I read in Herbert Armstrong's autobiography this morning. He was able to visit Germany in 1954 and 1956. This is just 9, 8, 9, 10 years on from the end of World War II, and he couldn't believe how dramatic the transformation was physically. I mean, just the reconstruction, the rebuilding of Germany. And of course, that was brought on by the United States. Building back up this powerful nation. One that in 1945, some analysts didn't think would ever reemerge as a significant power in the world for 100 years. The devastation was so widespread. That's what it looked like in 1945, and that's when Mr. Armstrong was on the air. That's when he was at the UN, the new United Nations meeting, and reporting that, well, there's people here trying to preserve the peace of the world. They have their plans, and Germany has its plans as well. He said, we don't understand German thoroughness. From the start of World War II, they have considered the possibility of losing this second round as they did the first. And they've carefully, methodically planned in such eventuality the third round, World War III. Hitler has lost. This round of war in Europe is over, and the Nazis have now gone underground. They plan to come back and to win on the third try. That's prophesied in Revelation 17. And so that's why we've been sounding the alarm with the same warning. And now you're seeing the headlines that we've been talking about for years, in some cases decades. This clip here from my father's program. This is 2004, 12, 13 years ago now. Notice what he said in his program, The Crown of the Holy Roman Empire.
Have we forgotten Germany's history? Have we forgotten what they've done in the past, causing two world wars and many other wars? Now look, Germany's a great nation, and according to the Bible, it's the only one that's ever repented when God sent a prophet to them And in the world tomorrow, they're going to be a great nation according to Bible prophecy. So I'm not down on Germany at all, but we do have to face reality, and we all do have our particular bents and problems and difficulties. But if the United Nations said that about Germany, when they were in rubble, I mean beaten down totally, and one of their major concerns was them rising up and causing a third world war, since they had caused two other world wars, not to mention other wars, like in 1870. But again, this is what the United Nations talked about.
This is the cycle of history, recent history, that we've often talked of. Of course, Bible prophecy is what we focus on primarily. But the history lesson is there too. That first chapter, Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, the title again is The Resurgence of Nazi Germany. There were those, I'm sure, 20 years ago that looked at that booklet and that first chapter in particular. I mean, this is just 7-8 years after Germany had reunited. I'm sure there were those who ridiculed the content of that first chapter. But we set up the booklet by saying that for several decades, God's church has been warning of the emergence of Germany as the most dominant player in a European Union of Nations. The Bible teaches that this force will suddenly catapult the world into the third and final world war. That's like the signature prophecy of Herbert Armstrong's. And because of it, I mean, we've hit the nail on the head in so many other prophecies, sub-prophecies underneath that big one. Brexit. We knew Britain would be on the outside. And so we talked about it. Herbert Armstrong talked about it in the mid-1950s. He said Europe would come together. The Eastern European satellite nations of the old Soviet Union, they'd break free. And they'd join together with Western Europe. And you'd have a united Europe. You'd have a united Germany. Britain would be on the outside eventually. That happened. Brexit happened last year. And even NATO. I gave you those quotes from NATO. Or that NATO article from 1999. We knew that Britain would be on the outside and that America dominating the European Union with the NATO organization, that would soon come to an end, that Germany would use it to cloak its ambitions for as long as is possible, and then finally break free from it and move on. And now we're seeing that happen. Well, in that article from 1997, we were quoting from Bernard Connolly's book, I mentioned that one, The Rotten Heart of Europe. Martin Lee had a book in 1997, The Beast Reawakens. He said something awful was laid bare by the fall of the Berlin Wall. I mean, this is awful what's happening. The fascist beast had reawakened and was on the prowl again. There were a few lone voices like that, I mean, out in the secular world. Most notable among them, Margaret Thatcher. I mean, she was as close to Winston Churchill as there was in the 1990s. She said, "You haven't anchored Germany to Europe." And that's what we thought. Well, Europe, you know, NATO, America dominating NATO, this would anchor Germany to Europe and to the U.S.-led NATO organization. But she said in 1995, "You haven't anchored Germany to Europe. You've anchored Europe to a newly dominant, unified Germany." I mean, have there been truer words said about the European Union project? Looking at it today, she said it's not going to work. In the end, you'll find that it won't work. Well, that was Margaret Thatcher in 1995. But what about Herbert Armstrong in 1945? What about Herbert Armstrong? Even while Germany lay in ruin and ashes after World War II, to come through all of that with that crystal clear prophetic vision and say that Germany would rise again and dominate Europe. He knew that the Nazis weren't eliminated altogether. He knew, like Revelation 17 says, that they just went underground. And well, so much has happened since, and it's all happening in accordance with Bible prophecy. Jesus said, "Watch and pray always, that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass." They will come to pass. And so Jesus said, watch and pray. Events in Europe, and in Germany in particular, they're moving so fast. And that's why it's so crucial for us to understand the prophetic framework, the significance of these events that we're now witnessing. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the program this week. You can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us again today. We'll see you tomorrow.